Good morning, Dennis Blackhurst on behalf of Obadallah and Intisar Barrer and their five children. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
This case is, okay, thank you. This case is a case involving the wrongful removal of five children from their parents, the Barrers. On summary judgment, the court entered summary judgment in favor of the plaintiffs against the caseworkers who removed the children and dismissed all of the claims against the police officer that was there on the scene when the children were removed. We've appealed the dismissal of the claims against the police officer, Officer Flam. I'd like to focus on the wrongful removal aspect of the case. The police officer is entitled to qualified immunity if he can establish that he did not violate any clearly established civil rights. I believe the facts of the case establish everything that we need to proceed to trial against Officer Flam. The clearly established law of the Ninth Circuit is that children can only be removed from their parents with a court order or in exigent circumstances. They have to have an exigent circumstances means that you have to have evidence or a belief that the children are going to be harmed or abused in the time it would take you to obtain a court order. In this case, Officer Flam arrived at the home. There was a stalemate between the caseworkers and the parents about the removal of the children. They were in the driveway. Officer Flam came up. First thing the parents tell Officer Flam, they're trying to take away our children. We need to see a court order. That's the first thing the parents say to Officer Flam. There was an exchange. Officer Flam tells them to be quiet or he's going to take them to jail for interrupting the caseworkers doing their job, and he tells them to stop being silly right off the bat. The case law of the Ninth Circuit, the Calabretta case in particular, provides that officers are presumed to know the law. They're presumed to understand it. Officer Flam at his deposition testified that he understood the law, that he'd had 18 years of studying search and seizure cases. He understood it. He knew, he testified, he admitted that he knew that there was no court order. The Barrers told him there was no court order. He understood it. He testified, he said, there was nothing that led me to believe that there was a court order. He also testified that
isn't the point that he, at least under the cases, he was relying on the social services team that was there, and we have this case Shursit, which was discussed in the briefs. And so, at least in light of that, how can you say that it was a clearly established violation of law?
Understood. I'm glad we're going to the Shursit case. The Shursit case says that the police officer can rely on other state workers, but it requires the police officer to conduct a reasonable investigation. He asked to know the basis for the removal. He admitted that he knew there was no court order, and he admitted that he knew that there were no exigent circumstances. All he had to do was say to those caseworkers, do you have a court order? And they would have said no. And he said, well, what's your basis? And then they would have had to explain what it was. In the Shursit case, the police officers at the scene were involved in a conversation between the caseworkers and the parent, where the caseworkers explained exactly what the basis was for the removal, and they had a reasonable reason to trust what the caseworkers were saying. That didn't happen here. He was told there was no court order. He testified he didn't think that there were exigent circumstances. I'd like to draw your attention. There's a new case that came up as I was preparing for oral argument, a Northern District of California case. It's AMK versus Contra Costa County. It's not in our brief. I emailed opposing counsel on Friday to let him know that I might be using this. It's 2019 WL4601606. It's AMK versus Contra Costa County. Similar case where police officers assisted in the removal of special needs children from their parents, and they talk about the Shursit case in the district court. noting that it is well established that law enforcement officers and agencies are entitled to rely on one another to a certain extent. The court found that the officers did not act blindly at the instruction of DHS, but instead had knowledge of the key details that informed DHS's determination. So they're discussing the same facts with respect to the Shursett case. These details included the children's mother testing positive for methamphetamine and other drugs shortly before the children's removal, and the mother's prior conviction for child endangerment. The officers had also witnessed the parents' refusals to allow the officials to meet with or speak with the children, and knew that a warrant could not be obtained for at least 36 hours. Under such circumstances, the court concluded that the officer's reliance on DHS's instruction was objectively reasonable. That's how we read the Shursett case, exactly the same. The officers there had a reason to understand what the caseworkers were doing. And then it goes on, it says, contrary to defendant's suggestion, Shursett does not stand for the proposition that officers are per se immune from liability when they rely on the assertions of social workers in removing children from their homes.
Counsel, may I ask a question?
Yes.
Judge Schroeder, I've watched the video. It's my understanding that the police officer had been there before, the day before when one of the children had fallen into the pool, and that one of the children who was autistic, I think, was running around at the time without any clothes on, and this officer did not actually go into the house and take the children. Now, are all those things correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Don't those facts make a difference here?
They give the officer some reason to believe that there were problems. Problems does not justify a removal. He's still stuck with federal law that says court order or exigent circumstances. One of the key points that the trial judge made with respect to the caseworkers was that the caseworkers all testified that they were concerned about Muhammad, the oldest child, because he's very, and I know this child, he's got real, he has challenges. He's very difficult. That's where their concern was. They testified that they were concerned about the parents' ability to control Muhammad. There are four other children that were removed. They were all removed in one shot. Maybe you say there's a legitimate concern for Muhammad, but Arizona law is crystal clear that they have to have a separate basis to remove each child. They have to do a separate analysis for each child and why they are at risk in the parents' custody. So even if Officer Flam had some reason to think, well, they can't control Muhammad, that doesn't justify the removal of the other four children.
Which child had fallen into the pool?
A younger brother named Mustafa. Father was right there, retrieved him immediately, no harm to the child. I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Blackhurst. Mr. Reed.
All right, I believe I've taken it off mute, Your Honors. Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Jason Reed, and I represent Officer Flam in this matter. The court should affirm the district court's order because Officer Flam didn't commit a constitutional violation and he didn't violate clearly established law. And as a result, he'd be entitled to qualified immunity. Like Mr. Blackhurst, I'll focus on the removal of the children. I think the primary problem with the analysis of plaintiffs is they want to lump Officer Flam together with DCS employees, the people who made the decision and who actually effectuated the removal of the children. Shursett rejected that analysis. They said that we're not going to analyze whether it was appropriate or not appropriate to remove the children because that does not accurately analyze the role that the police officer served in that matter. In Shursett, they looked at three primary factors. One, the Child Protective Agency, which was DHS in that situation. Were they authorized to conduct an investigation and to make a child protective custody determination? In fact, they were. Two, did they make the decision without the involvement of the law enforcement officers who were on scene to remove the children? They did. And then three, and this is different from our case, the officers who eventually entered the house without a warrant and who physically removed the children from the house from the warrant, was their reliance on the DHS's opinions or DHS decision reasonable, or was their reliance appropriate? In this case, looking at those factors, it clarifies that the district court properly granted qualified immunity to Officer Flam. First, DCS, the Child Protective Agency in Arizona, clearly has statutory authority to conduct investigations and to remove children from their homes if an adequate basis exists. Two, they are the ones who made the decision to remove the Barrera children in this circumstance. That is undisputed. That was part of a request for admission that was served on plaintiff. They admitted that Officer Flam had no involvement in the decision to remove the children from this house. Then third, the issue that came up in Sherstedt was the officer's warrantless entry into the house to help remove the children reasonable in reliance. But in this case, we don't even get there because Officer Flam admittedly never went into the house. He didn't make the decision to remove the children, and he did not physically remove the children from the house. As you can see from the video, he was there for safety purposes to ensure that nothing untoward happened, nothing got challenging. I think that both sides testified that, especially in these circumstances, when children are being removed from the home, they can be dangerous. They can be emotionally charged. They can be challenging. And at that point, an officer who has not been involved in the investigation or otherwise is going to come in and establish those parameters, control the scene, if you will. But again, that was the extent of Officer Flam's investigation. So as such, to the first part, did he go into the home without a warrant? No. Did he remove the children? No. Did he make the decision to remove the children? No. At that point, he has not committed a constitutional violation, and the first part would be satisfied for the qualified immunity. Recognizing that, plaintiff has suggested in briefing, that he was an integral participant. But again, the Ninth Circuit law on integral participation is quite clear that merely being present at the scene isn't sufficient to impose liability. Just being at the scene won't allow a plaintiff to group all the people together when a basis otherwise doesn't exist. If we look at Sherstedt again, they are looking for things like, was there a collective decision process? Was there a prior briefing? Was this a collective team? And based on the facts, including the admissions and the request for admissions and the video, there wasn't a collective effort. Officer Flam was dispatched subsequently. I mean, the DCS got there first. They were trying to do their jobs, remove the children on whatever basis they felt was appropriate. Officer Flam got dispatched later on. There was no pre-briefing, pre-decision otherwise. And as such, as a matter of law, he cannot be considered an integral participant in the removal of the children.
Counsel, am I correct that the social workers were also sued and that case is settled so that we have only the police officer here now? Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor, that is accurate. At the end of discovery, the defendants, meaning Officer Flam from the Mesa Police Department and the DCS employees and DCS, both moved for summary judgment. The summary judgment was granted in favor of Officer Flam for the reasons that's been briefed, obviously. The motion for summary judgment was actually denied as to DCS and entered in favor as to plaintiffs. And subsequently, Officer Flam wasn't involved, but it's my understanding they subsequently went to the mediation and were able to settle that out of court.
Thank you.
Another aspect of plaintiff's argument is the duty to investigate. One of the elements is Officer Flam should have verified whether or not there's a warrant. But that doesn't really resolve the issue because, again, looking at Sherstedt, there wasn't a warrant to remove the children, and the officers were still entitled to qualified immunity because the officers verified that the Child Protective Agency, in that circumstance, had made the decision to remove the children. It's undisputed here that by the time Officer Flam arrived at the Brewer household, they had made the decision to remove the children. They had issued a temporary custody notice, which at the time, Arizona law provided that absent a warrant, that was one of the documents that the DCS would provide, and a hearing would occur shortly thereafter as for lack of a better word, a post-deprivation hearing. But in any event, Officer, as you can tell from the video, verified that DCS had in fact made the decision to remove the children, which is what strongly distinguishes this case even from Wallace. In Wallace, law enforcement officers were held accountable, or at least went to trial, with regard to whether or not they appropriately relied on DCS to remove the children. As discovery went through that case, it was determined that DCS had never made a decision to remove the children. They had never moved for a protected custody order or otherwise. And so as recognized in Sherstedt, it was different. The officers in Wallace did not verify anything. They actually acted in the absence of direction from DCS. In contrast here, it's simply undisputable based on the video that Officer Flam knew that DCS had made the decision to remove the children. At that point, we again look at what Arizona law provides. Is DCS empowered to conduct these investigations and to make those removal decisions? Yes, it is. Looking more at the search set analysis, they look to see whether the Arizona statutes required an officer to either reinvestigate and or refuse to cooperate. They do not. That was one of the factors that the search set court found persuasive. In reaching those decisions, the court announced its policy simply that when an officer who is not involved in the decision to remove the children, doesn't go in the house to remove the children, and otherwise doesn't commit a constitutional violation, they're not going to be put in a catch-22 of either following what DCS says and taking the children, or refusing to cooperate with DCS and potentially endangering the children. The Ninth Circuit has removed that from the table. The officer who is not involved will not be put in a catch-22. And to quote, they say, they don't have a duty to verify the legality of their decision to remove. They don't have to second-guess DCS. And to suggest that the law was clearly established, so to eliminate Officer Flam's reliance on the qualified immunity analysis, that it was clearly established at the time of the incident is improper, because Shurset, which was issued a year later, clarified that the contours of this law weren't clearly established. You can't argue that things were clearly established a year before an opinion that specified that it wasn't clearly established.
Can I ask you a question about the excessive force?
Yes, ma'am.
In your view, what justified Officer Flam's handcuffing the father and putting him to, making him lie on the ground?
That was primarily a safety concern. I think, again, going back to what both parties recognize, these types of circumstances are difficult. I mean, there's no doubt that they were upset, and it was a very challenging circumstance. Officer Flam knows that. He knows that they can be emotional and potentially dangerous. A parent might do something that otherwise they might not do. Plus, as he gets the call to be dispatched to the house, he's being told that the Brayers are confrontational, that they're resistant, that they're not cooperating with the DCS employee. When he gets there, he confirms that they're upset. Mrs. Barrera suggested on video that she was going to go into the house and barricade their children. Barricade the children can often result in a very dangerous situation. Then we have Officer Flam, who instructed to remain outside for the purpose of safety. He wanted to protect the Bears, Barreras, DCS, and himself, so he ordered everyone to stay outside. Mr. Barrera did not follow those instructions and made a move to go inside. And inside, it's difficult to predict what may be in there. Could there be a weapon? Absolutely. Knives, tools, otherwise, there also could create the barricade situation. So at that point...
Was his move to go inside that justified the handcuffing?
Yes, it was. Because in those types of circumstances, where it be characterized as a search or maintain the scene, officers are provided wide discretion to control those scenes, including the use of handcuffs to control those scenes. I've cited a variety of cases, both from the Ninth Circuit and from the strict Supreme Court on that issue, and it really is a safety issue on those ideas to control the scene. I see my time is done, so I'd simply ask the court to affirm the district court's order. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reed. Mr. Blackhurst, rebuttal?
Quickly, integral participant rule. I think Officer Flam clearly was an integral participant. Nothing had happened before he arrived. He restrained Mr. Barrera. He kept Mrs. Barrera out of the way while the children were removed. He actually drove Muhammad in his police officer to DCS. He was an integral participant. The caseworkers in their notes said that Officer Flam helped with the removal. It wouldn't have happened without him. I think
Mr. Blackhurst, even if an inquiry had been made by the officer and he determined that the removal wasn't warranted, what are you expecting him to do if DCS decides to go ahead and remove the children? Is he simply to abandon them, even if there's escalating anger or violence?
If someone's trying to come into my house and there's a police officer there and there's no justification for it, I try to put myself in the Barrera's position. What are they supposed to do? They ask the police officer to help. and he has to make that decision. I understand it's a difficult position. I understand it's a difficult call, but he's the first line of defense between the Barreres and an unconstitutional removal of their children. Mr. Reed rightfully talks about how emotional this is. I have five children. I don't know what I would do in that situation, but I certainly would feel that I was justified to go in my house and shut the door. He's part of the system. He's got to be held responsible and be expected to understand what the law provided for. In the Wallace case, the police officers got a call from Child Protective Services and were told that there was a court order to remove the children because he was going to sacrifice them to Satan. The father was going to sacrifice them. They went and removed the children. Those police officers were not granted immunity under that circumstance because they didn't do anything to check. That's what our situation is here. Maybe he's off the hook if he just says, hey, what are you doing? You don't have a court order. And then they call the county attorney. They call someone to find out.
Mr. Blackhurst, I think your time is up, and so I don't want to cut you short. My colleagues have other questions, but I want to mind our time limits. If Judge Schroeder and Judge McShane don't have further questions, I think we'll go ahead and submit the case.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, counsel, on both sides. We appreciate it. The case is submitted.
Thank you.